Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. I am here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. We are here with Chris. You can find on Twitter at SkateXEdge. And we are here with Damien. You can find on Twitter at Damien Johnston. Actually, you have two number ones for the week because we took a little mini vacation last week. So we have Power Man and Iron Fist, number one, by Joe Kelly and Martin Marazzo. And we have the
That's super wrong.
So Brian didn't change anything again on the script. So Power Man and Iron Fist by Walker Green and Lowridge. And we have The Discipline by Peter Milligan, Leonardo Fernandez, Chris Peter, and Simon Boland. Our overrated underrated for the week is black metal albums, although I might just pick bands. I'm not sure if I'm going to narrow it down, but I think I can do it.
Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
Once again, I'm super backed up on comics because I am trying my darndest to plow through the novel I'm reading because I bought it last year at C2E2, and I would like to finish it and review it before we go back to C2E2 next week. So I feel like I should really get on this. So I'm going to try and plow through that as much as possible. And I've been watching a lot of TV to catch up so we can do other podcasts on that, and that's kind of taken up the majority of my time. I don't know about you guys, but what about you? Brian's in the hood over here. So what are you reading over there, G-Money?
I've talked about hard case crime novels. I'm a huge fan. I don't remember how I found her per se, but the author Krista Faust, she interested me right away because prior to becoming a writer, which is something she always wanted to do, she also was a fetish model and a pole dancer and she did all kinds of weird sex work type stuff. Settle down, weirdo. Anyway, she's written
after midnight.
Anyway, I bought her first Angel Dare novel, Money Shot. I knew it, and get ready because Chris is going to start cackling any second now. The book's called Money Shot, and it's about an ex-porno star who gets caught up in some kind of noirish crime, gangland, what do you call that? Shenanigans. And I'm going to just go ahead. I haven't finished the book yet, but I'm flying through because she is an amazing writer. If you're into noir or pulp, detective, violent crime stories, she is phenomenal. So, Krista Faust, if you find any of her books and you're into that sort of thing, and she definitely throws a lot of her perversions in there as well. So, Chris, we'll probably go out and buy all her books tomorrow.
No.
All right, over the weekend.
Okay.
Also, Fargo Season 2 was the best. There you go.
It was good.
Still have to watch it.
There was one episode.
I liked it.
You finished it?
Yeah, that was great.
It was Mike Milligan, not the greatest villain in recent memory, at least.
I have both seasons on DVR. I still have to watch it.
Have you watched the first one?
No.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, I guess I can be the impartial one. I've actually watched the first season. I thought it was absolutely amazing. And I think 4 or 5 episodes into the second season, and I have to say, as of right now, it doesn't hold up to the first season. I keep hearing differently, but I guess until I finish it, I won't know. But I think
it's a bit of a slow burn.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Mm-hmm. I just like the way it kind of just shifts around, because in the first few episodes, I'm thinking Dodd Gerhardt is the scariest man of all time. And then towards the end, at least I completely changed my opinion on him because he turned out to be such a, not a dud, he's still a great character, but not quite the ultra villain that he started out to be. And somebody else kind of takes over the reins of that persona. But in the middle of all that, Mike Milligan just owns that entire season, and has such the his like the weirdest end ever. It was so like, meh, but not in a bad way.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to watch it again too, because I got a lot out of it. I watched, you know, as they came out, so there's that big week gap in between stuff, and I feel like that one would be better served, I think, watch it like a little closer together. Not exactly binge watch or anything, but because I think you get some fatigue with shows like that, you know.
No, it's true, because it's definitely filmed and it's paced much more methodical than your, you know, The Good Wife or any other weird action show on TV. It rewards somebody's patience.
Yeah, and attention too.
Yes. And because, like, the first season, they kept making slight references to the incident, and season two was the incident. I kept looking for that little bit of information that would hint at what season three is going to be about. I'm hearing it's going to be present time, because I guess Alison Tolman's coming back. We'll see.
Okay.
But, yeah, I can't recommend... I love that show more than probably my own existence.
Wow.
I hope they don't cancel it.
Right?
What now? I just watch season 8 of The Simpsons over and over until I'm too old to see anymore.
All right. Chris, have you got anything over there, or you disappeared on us, or what?
No, hold on. I just put you on mute because I was talking to my son.
Nailed it.
What have I read? I read Babushka.
Number one?
On Image. No, on Image. Like, I got caught up. I've read 1 through 4.
Oh, I've only read the first two.
Yeah, I dig it. It's cool.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's not bad. It's not bad. It's not great. It's not reinventing the wheel, but they've got like enough twists in it for me to like keep my interest.
Yeah, I can agree with that so far.
So, and what else have I read? The Violent, which is awesome, but you guys don't read it, so I guess it's just Damien and I that are super cool.
No, I read it. Well, I mean, I'm not caught up, but I read it.
We're just gonna ruin it for you, so.
I'm not going to do that.
I'm kidding. Deadly Class, got caught up with that, and Injection. Is anyone reading that?
Mm-mm.
Never even heard of it.
Okay. The one by Warren Ellis? Yeah, it's on Image, dude. You've heard of it. Injection?
Sure.
Okay. Well, the second arc is actually really good. The first arc was just okay, but the second one's actually pretty awesome. I finished Seduction of the Innocent. And I actually finally got caught up like last couple weeks ago. I just read 2, 3, and 4 straight. Hold on. Anyways, and issue 2 and 3 were really good, a lot better than the first issue, but then issue 4 was like, man, did you guys finish that whole thing?
Of which
Brian
one?
Brian Scott, Seduction of the Innocent?
No, I did not finish it yet.
Brian, you haven't?
No.
How far are you?
I just have to read the last one.
Okay. Do you agree? Like, I think 2 and 3 were, like, way better than number 1.
I've liked it all so far, so I'm...
I'm not saying I hate it. I'm just saying 2 and 3 were really good. So that means I liked it.
2 and 3, all 3 of them were good so far.
But, yeah, the fourth one kind of just... Kind of how it ends is just kind of like, eh. And, I think that's pretty much about it. You know, just some other things I got caught up on. You know, nothing really. Nothing else. That's about it. Yep.
Sweet.
Word.
Since we took a couple weeks off, I read a few things. Last Saga, 34. Violent 3, Fourth Ringside, And then I read, both are number ones, not realizing one of them is going to be the number one.
Yeah, so did I.
The Discipline. Yeah.
The
and then,
Key to Self... Never mind.
Dork.
it's good. What else are they doing, though? I don't know. I was going to go see Deadpool, and I didn't. There you go.
Every time I saw that title for that comic, The Discipline, like, automatically that Earth Crisis song just, like, pops into my head. Like, I'm reading it. As I'm reading the title, I all of a sudden it's like Carl's voice just goes, The Discipline.
I don't know. I heard that remake or redoing of that song they did, like, a year ago, and oh, my God.
Yeah, I haven't, and I don't want to.
No, you do not want to.
The cannibal corpse of the cannibal corpsification of that song? Nope. Pass.
They were going downhill right after that first LP, my opinion.
I just, if they're going to do that style, fine. Just don't ruin a classic.
I agree.
That's always weird when bands do that. I don't really get that. Like, so much more things you'd be doing in a studio besides, like, redoing a song that you know will never, no one will ever be like, oh, finally you fixed that song.
Like, I almost wonder if they just...
That's like having Dag Nasty go back into the studio to redo Can I Say.
Yeah, you almost wonder if they just, like, they ran out of ideas or just feeling really lazy one day and you're like, yeah, let's just redo this.
Well, actually, that's probably not a good analogy because I actually hold Dag Nasty's Can I Say on a higher pedestal than I would Earth Crisis.
I just remember when Anthrax went in the studio and pretty much recorded half of Spreading the Disease and Among the Living with John Bush, and it was like... This did not need to happen. And I say that because I bought that, so I'm pretty much just throwing myself out there anyway. Enough about Anthrax.
There was something I was going to ask Damien if he read or not, because I was asking him...
I finally read Starve.
Oh, what'd you think?
I thought it was really good. I did not expect it to be about what it was about.
I know. tell me the part where...
It's like... The Top Chef and the Running Man or something put together.
Yeah. Whoa. Nice.
I like really weird. I like one of the challenges is like you have to go to the kitchen and you have of this restaurant and take it over and it's pretty much like a gang fight.
Yes. That part's more like the Warriors. Like you have to go to a kitchen in a neighborhood. They don't want you there and they will fight you.
They're putting their pots on their heads like helmets.
I just like that when Brian Wood is at his best, he finds a way to sneak social commentary into the weirdest stories ever.
It was very fun to read. I'm excited to read more of it. It was a really, I can't imagine it was a very easy pitch.
So did you read just like a couple issues or like the first trade or?
First trade.
So I'm the only idiot that only read one issue so far?
Yep.
Yeah.
Nailed it. I guess I need to get a better job, huh?
Yeah, that's good. Oh, and I bought the murder book collection, that Ed Brisson thing. The Dark Horse put out.
How is that?
It's great. I mean, it's where the island is like, you know, an ongoing story. The murder book was always like little vignettes, little like 4 or 5 page things. Always with really interesting, cool ideas, and I really love those. Actually, that's what I maybe really like his stuff. I'm still, you know, the violin is definitely, I think, great, but it's, you know, it's kind of growing as it moves forward. Like, the story's not entirely clear. Where these were just, like, literally, like, 4 pages each, and every time you kind of, like, came right into this, like, the center of a story and got out before it was ended. So, a lot of the stories kind of stick with you. Some of them are really, 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 really dark. I mean, for, you know, noir and murder fiction, I guess that's pretty common, but... there's a few that just have so many cool ideas. You're like, man, someone would make an entire movie just over this one idea. So it's certainly worth picking up, and I think it's pretty inexpensive, like $12 or $13 trade from Dark Horse.
Maybe I'll get that next. I just picked up that Red Handed from Matt Kent.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Fine Art of Strange Crimes. Another one. I don't know if you've read any of Matt Kent's noir stuff.
No, I have not.
It's very. Almost like 1930s influenced. It's just really weird, but pretty good. I like his art style. I think it's really unique.
Oh, so it in its comics too. It's not novels.
Oh no, it's all. You mentioned the whole vignette thing. It's kind of similar. Like Pistol Whip was. It was like a weird detective story with a magician and a weird superhero.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I have the Pistol Whip, actually. My friend gave it to me for my birthday, and I have not finished it yet, but I thought that was quite good. And yeah, that was similar.
Yeah, that's kind of like Matt Kent's like noir style, if you want to call it that.
Nice.
Anyhow.
Okay, yeah, I'll check
I was going to ask Brian. Hey, Brian, did you ever read Filthy Rich by Azzarello?
Nope.
Okay. Never mind.
Yeah, I was just saying, nailed it. all right, well, I guess we can move it into number ones then. That seemed to be winding down. So the first one we're going to do is Power Man and Iron Fist, which is a Marvel book that Brian picked. So we'll kind of let him take the lead on this.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and just admit that this pick was largely due to a slow week in terms of options. Not that I wouldn't have been interested in this, but there weren't a lot of other alternatives. Anyhow, it's essentially Luke Cage and Iron Fist. They are hanging out. They go to a women's prison to retrieve somebody they were once acquainted with. Something about a grandmother's diamond, and they go to retrieve it. It's been stolen. It's actually been like about 2 weeks now since I read it, so forgive my cloudy rememberings of this particular story. It's kind of... The trinket is like a grandmother's heirloom, and they're asked by this woman who just comes out of prison after, I don't remember, 10 years, 20 years, I don't remember. Somebody's irrelevant. Secretary or best friend, I don't remember. Please get it back. It meant a lot to my family. And then it turns out she's not quite on the up and up, and she's already buddying up with this other character, Black Mamba. Was that her name? I'll look it up.
Black Mariah.
Black Mariah, yes. Yeah, you know, honestly, this was not really my favorite book in the world. It was okay. It was kind of a little jokey, in my opinion, for what it's supposed to be. I mean, it kind of felt like a buddy cop movie with these two characters. But they tried to recapture the 70s vibe, I think, of Heroes for Hire. And it felt a lot like when Tarantino did the Grindhouse movie, and then all of a sudden there was this big Grindhouse revival. It was good because it brought back all these movies like Sadomania and Cannibal Holocaust that nobody had ever seen, and put them back on store shelves again and made them semi-relevant to a certain audience. But then came the, you know, millennial, or I don't know, that's probably a bad term, but like all these new filmmakers like, ooh, I'm going to make a Grindhouse movie. And I think the spirit of Grindhouse was captured best because it was an organic thing, whereas this modern Grindhouse revival was purposeful, and therefore it just felt not, it didn't feel right. And that's kind of how I got, that's what kind of what I took from this. Like, this guy, whoever's doing this, was trying to, I guess, recapture the Grindhouse vibe of the 70s Heroes for Hire comics, but it felt, or it didn't feel right. And then just, and maybe I'm just being like overly whatever, but did anyone else kind of feel like this book was slightly racist?
I didn't get that, but
I didn't either.
I'm excited to reread it with that filter on.
I think it was the last page when Black Mariah was introduced, and like just the way she's, I don't know what it
kind of has the very, actually, you know what, now I know what you're talking about, because it definitely has that like Tom and Jerry,
yeah,
Thomas
feel to it.
Oh yeah.
That part, I thought you meant like the whole book overall, but yeah, the last, it was a little weird.
Yeah, I have to be apologetic for not really remembering the finer details, but there was never a moment reading where I was like, oh man, this is great, or this is terrible. I was just kind of like, this is here, and I'm looking at it.
Well, if I can kind of elaborate a little bit, I believe it was a, you know, Luke Cage, a.k.a. Power Man, back in the day, used to be partnered up with Iron Fist.
Right.
And that woman that they went to go retrieve from prison as she was getting out, she was part of their little group. And she went to prison for some reason. I don't exactly recall why, but, you know, like you said, she's mixed in with the wrong crowd, but she convinces her quote-unquote ex-partners, like, you got to do this for me. It'll mean a lot to me. And it wasn't stolen. It was, you know, when she went away, her boyfriend, lover, whatever you want to call it, I believe, lost the amulet to this guy in, like, a card game. And that's how he came to get it. And he knew what was going down. He was like, yeah, I didn't steal anything. They're trying to pull the wool over your eyes. You don't, you know, blah, blah, blah. Long story short, fight breaks out. They get the amulet back. They return it to her. She's all grateful. And then enters the Tom and Jerry comically large woman who is like, you just stick with Mama. She's got this under control. Or whatever the hell she said.
It's something like that. It does have that, a little bit of that flavor.
I mean, it's the best way to put it, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't go so far as to be like, oh, I completely hated it. But, I mean, it was nothing new. It was a story that I felt, you know, you've kind of read it before, you know. I almost feel like Iron Fist would have made a better cameo in, like, the Ant-Man series as part of his security business. He's got that same kind of goofy wit that Ant-Man does that might have worked well together, but personally, I don't see a reason to keep going. Not that I hated it, it just didn't really, it's not really my thing, I guess. Artwork is awesome. I'll give it that. I kind of really, that's like the best part about it is the artwork. Very 70s-ish.
They had some cool panels in there.
Yeah.
The guy's got a cool DeviantArt page, Stanford Green. I checked it out after I saw the art because I really liked it too. It had this sort of, kind of Paul Popis sort of vibe at times and I don't know. I thought it was pretty cool. So I looked up his DeviantArt. I mean, it's mainly stuff like this. I mean, he has like the covers to these comics on there, and you know, his drawing of Captain America and his drawing of a bunch of people passed out at a party and stuff. But it's just a big collection of stuff. But his art's great. I thought that was what definitely made the comic kind of fun to read.
Yeah.
I don't know much about these characters, to be honest. I read the Iron Fist Matt Fraction collection.
How was that?
Of Iron Fist stuff. It was okay.
Just okay.
Yeah, I didn't really have anything invested in the character, and I feel like there was a lot of subtext that maybe I was supposed to know. Okay. I feel like there's a little bit of a they're kind of in all, whenever they bring back these characters and they're sort of they're almost like grooming them for this, you know, this era so they can put them in. Well, you know, there's going to be an Iron Fist show, what, like Daredevil, like one of the Netflix shows is an Iron Fist show,
right?
So you know, I knew that this character existed in that sort of Hell's Kitchen, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Power Man world. So I was like, I want to check that out. So I read a little bit of that. So I kind of knew a little bit was happening. But I mean, I didn't know anything really about these characters except for, you know, some of the connections to the MCU. It was just one of those things when I was a kid, I just never picked those up. You know, I read Cloak and Dagger and I read, you know, Captain America and X-Men and all that stuff. But I just, there were so many comics back then that I just couldn't follow them all, and for some reason this little group of ones I just never ever picked up, so this is all kind of brand new to me.
Yeah, I have to plead ignorance a little here too, and you know, the only reason I'm familiar with Luke Cage is from Jessica Jones TV show. You know, if it wasn't for that, I'd know the name and that's about it. He's a guy in what, Street Fighter or something? I know it's not the same guy, but you know, or Mortal Kombat, one of those fighting game has a Luke Cage, and I just
Johnny Cage.
Yeah, whatever. They're brothers or something, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, brothers, well, from different mothers then.
Fighting games are fairly stupid, so.
And there goes all the fighting game fans.
No, they're just all quarter moon half punching me right now or whatever. Quarter moon BA right one or I don't know. Who cares?
Yeah, that's what Street Fighter is.
My only familiarity was the Kari Andrews Living Weapon Iron Fist, which I actually liked. I liked that. I mean, it's pretty derivative of your typical superhero stories. He's a billionaire. He's a loner. He's, you know, kind of a ladies' man in a way. But then his whole martial arts story takes over, and it kind of blends Eastern fantasy with the Marvel Universe, and it's really pretty good. But this is more like Iron Fist by way of Ant-Man, cracking jokes and being a weird sidekick. And
Just, like really silly.
Yeah, the other one that I am familiar with, he was more serious and, you know, disciplined, I guess, in terms of his combat and lifestyle that informed it. But this was just, I don't know, not my thing.
Well, Chris, you haven't really weighed in. What are your thoughts?
You guys pretty much said it all.
Yeah. All right, well, I suppose we can number it and move on to the discipline.
I'm going to give it a 4. I just didn't really, it did nothing for me.
All right. You know, I didn't hate it. I didn't really love it, but I mean, overall, I'd probably like a 6.5. I'm not going to keep going, but I mean, it's decent for what it was. About the best I can say.
5.
Yeah. I'd probably say a 6.5 myself. The art was really fun to look at.
Yeah,
and that's enough for me to like have picked it up a few more times since, just to like look at it. And I enjoy the little goofiness of keeping with Luke Cage's like inability to swear, so he does the.
I forgot just, about that.
Yeah, he's like, I mean, the whole Sweet Christmas thing, of course.
Forfeit Nugan.
He says that something like, this guy's a bunch of fiddle faddle or something at one point. It's pretty adorable. It's like it's a little bit of like an.
It's pretty enduring.
Forgot about that.
Yeah.
All right. So moving on to the discipline, which
is a complete opposite.
Right, which was my pick. This one, based on the cover alone, it pulls you right in.
Oh, yeah, because she's about to get... Hey, Logan, can you go upstairs?
That's all because, you got to say.
Yeah,
pretty much. Because I got to go do this review.
The one thing... okay, so I'm going to run down the basic story. It's, you know, this lady who's married, you know, her husband's kind of the kind of guy who's not
she's
around...
She's repressed.
Yeah, you know, she talks to her dog more than anybody, you know... And
her extracurricular activities includes her mechanical battery operated.
I don't.
She never
recall any of that.
She did.
No, she
yes,
didn't.
She did.
Nope.
Anywho, no, her friend mentioned one, but that was as far as that went.
So she, you know, she spends most of her time jogging, complaining to her dog about her husband. And there's this guy who kind of has been scoping her out, and then he talks to her, and very interesting way to first meet somebody and convince them to go out with you the next evening. That was pretty amazing to me. But he's part of what seems to be some kind of a cult, and they're trying to perform this, you know, ritual because their supernatural enemy is getting stronger, and they need to get her into their clutches or whatever, and they have to finish this ritual with her, which doesn't necessarily end, you know, it has nothing to do with having sex with her, but it kind of does. It's, they don't exactly go into great detail on that as far as like why it's, you know, not really part of it, but it is kind of part of it. I mean, there's parts where he's obviously not human, you know, and they don't really go too much into detail as far as what these supernatural factions are or why they're fighting or what the ritual is or what any of it means. But the one thing that confused me the most was the one page where she goes to her sister's house, who's taking care of their sick mom, and like they completely hate each other because the one's like the rich prissy girl and the other one's the poor dumpy like
white trash
trying to take care of mom, and you know they very much don't get along, but it made no sense in the grand scheme of the whole book, in my opinion. I mean, I'm sure it'll come together eventually, but
no, I think that cult group actually mentions something about her other sister.
You know, I
like,
caught
if we
that
can't get her, if we can't get her, then we can go for the sister, they said.
Yeah.
So that's why
I don't know. I feel like if you hate your sister, like, who cares at that point? But again, you know, that's obviously something that'll come out in some of in the later issues. But based on what I've read, I don't know if I'm going to keep going.
Yeah. See, here in this one part, the guy goes, one of the head like whatever alien cult dudes goes, go after the other one, and he goes, "You mean Crystal? You want me to seduce the sister of Melissa?"
Right. Yeah.
So that's kind of where she.
And I don't know how the ritual got messed up in the first place. I mean, I know that the other faction of, I suppose, demons or whatever crashed the party.
Now that my son's gone, that cover of the comic book is awesome, where she looks like she's about to get fondled by Satan. Secondly, the pictures of her getting humped by the devil are awesome. Okay, I got that out of me now.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so there's quite a few different panels of that in here. There's, obviously there's...
I agree with you, though. It's kind of like it's not really... I don't think maybe the story was really fleshed out too well.
Yeah, and I mean, I know it's a first issue. I know we've discussed this on many, many, many other episodes, but it's...
Yeah, but there have been first issues that are really good, and
yeah,
you're not like kind of like left... wondering what's going on.
Yeah, like you're literally...
You got a clear grasp of what's going on, but this one it's kind of like...
You're wondering on everything when it's over.
Okay, she seems kind of sexually repressed, and she's... At one point, she's touching herself, and then... And having... There's these images of her, having sex with a demon.
Yeah, I almost feel like this issue would work better in a trade setting, but doing it issue by issue, it's kind of rough because, I mean, let's face it, there's so many comics out there nowadays. Like, you really need to grab people on that first issue to get them to stay with singles, I don't know. Everyone else...
Yeah,
I wrote down here, the only thing I wrote next to it was Disney's Gargoyles with Boners.
That was a TV show, wasn't it? The cartoon.
Yeah,
I remember. I used to watch that. Yeah, I mean that sums that up.
I don't know. I wasn't that into it. I really liked Peter Milligan too. Like the Extremist, the thing he did in the '90s with Ted McKeever was like one of my favorite things when it came out. It was one of the early Vertigo things. I was like, this is so awesome. And I've kind of followed him through Shade, the Changing Man, and that stuff. But I don't know. I wasn't that into this. It was cool. I mean, to see, I don't know, just, I'm into this weird cult idea, but I don't know. It wasn't really my thing.
Yeah, I feel like they didn't give you enough to just hook you. I don't know. It's...
No, I agree with you with that. I had the thought on my head, at the tip of my tongue, and now I can't, remember what it was I was going to say. Thanks a lot, Logan.
Yeah. Well, Brian, what do you think? You're shaking your head like you disagree with everything.
I don't, and I do. I do agree that the...
Oh, hold on. Sorry, Brian. Just before I interrupt you, just keep your thought, but my thought came back. If they would have actually maybe explained a little bit of why they needed her or the sister...
Yeah.
They could have at least given us that. Sorry, Brian. Go ahead.
The origin or the genesis of the cult, whatever that cult is, it looks to be some kind of like ancient, I don't know, maybe Roman or Greek gods type of. Maybe there's like she was an important figure in a past life. Maybe kind of like, I don't know how to explain this, but maybe like.
You can't because they honestly didn't give you enough to.
Well, that doesn't mean you can't extrapolate some kind of theory, at least.
Right.
But.
Right. Anyone can pretty much try, and say this and say that just based on what was said in the first issue.
But the whole the origin of this cult is kind of scattershot at the present time. But I kind of appreciate the idea of exploring different facets, I guess, of sexuality and sex is in general. No, because like one thing I thought about while I was reading this was how everyone, and maybe this is just an American thing, maybe it's not, But everyone, no matter what their proclivities are, they lock into a mindset when it comes to sex, and they kind of stick to it. Whether you're very, like, pedestrian about it, and you're like, oh, you know, you get married and you schedule sex on the birthdays and then, you know, Passover and then call it a night and just pretty much hold hands and watch VeggieTales or whatever weird people do. Or if you're like a super pervert who cannot exist without pornography at some point during your day, or everybody has like one like sexual identity, and they kind of just stick to it, and they don't ever, it's like they can't be sexual without locking into that persona. So I just kind of like appreciate the idea, like, here's this woman, she's like in her early 20s. She's married to a millionaire. She's kind of got a little bit of a personality issue because, I mean, like she, like I said, she's having long conversations with her dog about her marital frustrations. She's obsessed with this painting of, you know, demonic sex, and then she's got this guy who's, you know, kind of hinting towards, like, the fantasies that she thinks about when her husband's at work and ignoring her, so... I just like the idea, like, she's been in this box so far in terms of that, and now she's got this opportunity to just explore other avenues sexually. I just think that's, I don't know, I think that's kind of an interesting idea. It's not something I've seen in a lot of comics, so that has kind of hooked me, I guess. Like, there's a few issues here in terms of, I don't like when they give away everything in the first issue, but at the same time, they do... there's a few scattershot aspects. But other than that, I kind of... I like the Rosemary's Baby aspect, or at least, like, the vibe. I don't know. I kind of like this.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I kind of like this. And I agree with you. Like, I've liked other Peter Milligan stories I've read in the past, so... I don't know, I'm kind of on board with this one.
I am, too, and I think you know why.
Because of your fifth grade mental capacity?
Yeah.
Nailed it. Alrighty.
No, but I mean, I'm kind of like, I would have liked a little bit more. I'm kind of interested in seeing what it is that, you know, it's like, you know, like when I read that part when the guy's like, you know, they say go after the other. All of a sudden I thought of Star Wars, you know, like when, you know, Ben Kenobi goes, that boy was our only hope, and then Yoda goes, no, there's another. But, like, yeah, it is kind of weird because it's, like, the guy goes back, like, to where the, like, all these, like, Greek temples, you know, you see, like, these, you know, Doric and iconic columns, and he's talking to these three robed guys that aren't obviously human. But yeah, I'm interested in it. I'm gonna keep going and see what happens. But I think he could at least gave us like why they were needed.
I think I'll just wait for you guys to say yay or nay whether before I decide to go any farther or not. Because at this point, I feel the same way I do about Power Man and Iron Fist. At this point,
I still want to see some more pictures of, you know.
You know, there's this new thing they have out there called the internet?
Yes, I know.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, I feel the same way about both of our number ones for the week here. It's just, they're both all right, but, I mean, they don't really seem to be just grabbing me in a way that makes me want to keep going. But if you guys are going to keep going, that's great. Then you can tell me whether or not it's worth it, and then when the trade comes out, I can get that. But at this point, I'm at the same 6.5 as I was for the last one.
I'm
at a 7.5.
Yeah, I was going to say 7.5. I'm going to keep it on my radar. I don't know like how, but I'm going to keep it on my radar.
I'm going to say 6. I'm kind of curious because I do like Peter Milligan's writing that I should maybe check out another one and see what I think. So I'm going to say that.
There's always that possibility that you'll grab issue 2 and it's like, whoa.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, I know. I'm not being sarcastic. I'm saying, like, that actually has happened. I would actually say that with Low. When I first read Low, I was like, eh. this is all right. And then I got low two, and it was like, yeah, this thing rules. But, yeah. Anyways.
All right, so how do we feel about the President Obama writing the foreword to the final Peanuts collection for Fantagraphics? Has anyone else been collecting these? I mean, I only have one or two of them. It's sad to say I don't have a lot, but, you know, I was always a big Peanuts fan growing up.
Yeah, I was a big fan growing up, and I like them. I hope to one day have them because it is a great, like, library piece, you know?
I agree.
It's a great get for Fantagraphics. I know they... you know, they definitely have the ability to get that kind of thing. It's great for them.
Yeah, well, I was reading the little article here, and they were saying that, you know, I know you had worked for Fantagraphics. You said they were struggling to make it month to month, and I guess picking up this Peanuts series was like their last ditch effort, and that's what really helped pick them up out of that hole. Is, you know, they've got the exclusive rights to the complete Peanuts, and I mean, it's been a huge success this entire time. So, I mean, good for them, and that I love that eventually one day I'll be able to have all of my Peanuts comics on the shelf.
Yeah, it's awesome for them. I mean, it's getting Gary Groff was able to, you know, nurture such a relationship with all these different artists and creators, and Charles Schulz did one of his last interviews with Gary for the Comics Journal, and it was really great, super revealing about Peter Schulz or Charles Schulz and all that stuff. And not Peter Schulz. So it's just really awesome they got that. And, you know, when you get a book like that, I don't know exactly how this works. I could be talking out my ass, but from my, you know, I also worked at Diamond for a while. A lot of times, if someone wants to get these Peanuts collections in their store, they can't just order the Peanuts collections. You know, there's like a mandatory minimum, so they have to order like, you know, copies of 8-Ball and Hate and Acme Novelty Library. Not that most comic shops would, but it just having a book like that now, when a Barnes & Noble or Amazon or someone wants to order, you know, a shipment of something from Fantagraphics, they may need to order, you know, $1,000 or $2,000 shipment minimum. So they could either buy $2,000 of volume 25 of Peanuts, or they could buy, you know, a few hundred dollars of this, a few hundred dollars of that. So it's so good for them to get something like that. This is just going to raise their level even more. There's going to be people who have not never even heard about these Peanuts collections coming out, but are now going to hear about it, that Obama's writing the foreword.
Yeah, I found it interesting because I remember when he was first elected that he was popping up in Spider-Man, and they did that Blue Water graphic novel about him, and there have been like rumors that he used to read Conan the Barbarian, and there have been even some rumors here and there that he actually still reads comics regularly. And I don't know if that's one of those things where, you know, like the president has like the winning football team and he starts to, you know, read off a few stats from the teleprompter to make it sound like he's a huge football fan, when in reality he doesn't know anything about sports. Or I'm not saying him in particular, but any president.
Right, yeah, it's certainly within the realm of possibility.
Yeah, because there's no way anybody is into everything, and because he is who he is, he's got to pretend to know a thing or two about every guest that comes through the doors. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was when I saw that, I was like, that's, because I remember when I read the article as well, they were just like, yeah, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen? He could say no. And I was like, oh, good point.
Yeah.
Which is why I reached out and said, would you like to come on the podcast? He actually said no.
You totally didn't do that.
His handler's dog's best friend's neighbor's grass cutter said, don't even know. And said, next time we'll send somebody to the house. And I was like, all right. Point taken.
Anything to weigh in on that, Chris, or did you fall asleep on us?
No. About this?
No, I hate Peanuts. They're the worst.
No, I do like Peanuts.
They made your childhood magical.
Dude, I watched all of them. I can still watch all of those cartoons. I have them all.
You know what? I didn't even know about this, and I would like to have this for my son, actually.
That'd be a fantastic idea. Yeah, they've been doing it for 12 years
now. But the only thing that stinks is, like, volume 25, so, like, there's...
25.
Yeah. Quite a bit.
Yeah.
Well, you could start backwards, or you can start at the beginning.
Well, I just guess I better start, period.
I was reading one of the collections, because I think you have one of them.
I do.
Yeah, I was reading through it, like, maybe a year or two ago, and, I mean, I'm not saying that, like, they're gripping, you know, narratives and all kinds of plot twists or whatever, but they hold up for what they are.
Well, I mean, you figure he was doing them for 50 years. I mean, it's got every single strip from 1950 to 2000 when he died.
Right.
So, I mean, of course the comics, I mean, obviously they didn't age, but like the stories and the, you know, the whatever behind them obviously went with the times, you know, I would feel. No?
I never felt like they were set in any time period. I always felt like they're pretty universal in terms of,
right, but I mean, like,
what they were trying to convey.
Like, even the way they speak, you know, they're not going to be going gee willikers in, you know, 1998.
I still say gee willikers.
Well, I mean, so do I, but I'm trying to bring it back.
I'm into it.
All right. Well, I guess we should move on to over-under, then. Feel like we've got all we can out of that. Let's see.
Did you guys, real quick, did you guys watch the new Captain America trailer today?
I did. We just watched it, actually, before we all got on Skype.
Well, he did. I didn't. I was reading The Discipline.
Oh.
I was sitting here. Yeah, you know, I was sitting here after we finished the interview, and I was like, oh, my God, I totally forgot to read The Discipline. So, yeah, I had to run and read that while they got to watch trailers. So, yay. Is there anything specific about the trailer you wanted to bring up?
No. I thought it was exciting to me.
I'm not a Spider-Man fan by any means, but I've always liked the look. And when I saw him actually enter the frame at the last second, I was like, now this I can appreciate, because as much as I'm not necessarily a fan of the character, he belongs in this universe.
Yeah. I had reservations about how I thought that character was going to fit into how the MCU has been. You know, start off like fairly realistic, and I always thought Spider-Man was a little more of like pop culture kind of, or I mean pop art kind of,
yeah,
like more of like an Andy Warhol kind of superhero. But when I saw the trailer, I was like, you know what, this is going to be great. I totally have faith in them. I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, as far as the I guess movies are concerned, my only issue with Spider-Man is every time they reboot him, they put him back in high school. It's like, dude, we don't need another teenage Spider-Man. Everyone is born with the common knowledge of how Spider-Man became Spider-Man. We don't need that story told anymore.
Yeah, well, it's like scared of wolves, know how Spider-Man was made. Like, we have those in our body.
Yeah, like, it's just common knowledge at this point.
Well, I heard there's no backstory for him.
Yeah, I was going to say, the way they introduced him in the trailer, they pretty much, he just comes, boom, right out as...
No, in this movie, yes, that is, but with the whole reboot of Spider-Man they're doing, Fox is doing another reboot.
I did not know that.
I was
told. Fox has nothing to do with Spider-Man.
Well, whoever has the rights...
Marvel now.
Well, whatever. Last I heard is they were rebooting Spider-Man again, and they were putting him in... They're not doing that now?
His next solo movie will take place after this movie in the timeline, so they're not going to be redoing an origin.
And this has changed very recently, then.
Unless they just kind of blow through it in the first 3 minutes of the movie, there's not going to be a Spider-Man origin story again.
Well, then, never mind. Apparently, I'm not up on my knowledge, then.
No, it sounds kind of familiar. I think maybe there was going to be, and then when the MCU got hold of Spider-Man from whoever has X-Men, I don't know what that is, but I think there was a lot of projects that were in the pipeline that got canceled.
Good. Well, then I feel better now. I can stop being the grumpy old man. Well, all right then. We are on to over under black metal albums. Now, I have never in my life been like the biggest fan of black metal. So I thought it was going to be pretty tough, but it actually turned out being pretty easy and overrated. I don't know albums per se. I just know I was never very impressed with the band Emperor, and I know they were
man.
They were a huge deal. Don't worry, I left Cradle of Filth for you.
All good.
But I'm just like, I remember, like, I knew one dude that was super into black metal, and he used to rave about Emperor. So I finally was like, fine, put him on. Right. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, this is terrible. This is not good. Why do people like this? So there, Emperor, overrated.
How about Joe?
Of course.
Okay.
And Brian's eyeballing me, so I think he loves Emperor.
No, I'm about to get specific on that particular topic, because my overrated is actually the album Equilibrium by Emperor. Because what's the first one? Was that, am I even in the bands wrong, but I think the album was Anthems to the Welkin at Dusk. Is that Emperor?
I was thinking the first one was In the Night Side Eclipse.
That might be it then. I bought one of their first like two albums, and it was a disaster. But I remember I had heard later stuff, and I thought I liked it, so I bought Equilibrium, and oh my god, cannot get through it. That said, the Eson stuff that's come since, I've kind of liked some of it. But it's a little more prog rocky and weird, and he doesn't always, he kind of shifts between vocal styles. I mean, he did that on Emperor as well.
So which album did you not like?
Equilibrium.
Nine?
And you're right. Yes. Anthems into the Welkin at Dusk was the one before that.
Yes.
Okay, then that's the one I didn't... That was the first one I owned.
Yeah, the first one in general was the Night Side Eclipse.
Okay.
Thank you, Wikipedia.
Who's next?
I suppose whoever. Usually Chris jumps right in, but he's like...
Oh, sorry.
He's playing Xbox or something.
Well, you already said what it was.
Well, you can pick Cradle an album Filth. Like Brian did. Oh, Cradle of Filth, yeah. That was another one I never understood.
The whole band's existence. Could you even consider them black metal?
Not really. Maybe the first record. I never really got it either. I like black metal, and I did not.
See, I'm not
them.
Really a fan of it either, so...
I like some. I like Agalloch.
Well, yeah, I like
and...
Merciful Fate and Venom.
No, I like Arcturus and Agalloch and...
Just making up words at this point.
No. What's that other band that...
I would say any of those bands that came out of that whole Swedish, like, or Norwegian, actually.
I love
Mayhem,
Enslaved.
Emperor. Yep. Was it Dark Throne?
Yeah, Dark Throne.
I remember liking Dark Throne, actually. I mean, I don't think I ever owned anything, but... Or was it Dark Funeral? One of those two.
There is a Dark Funeral, too.
One of those two dark bands I thought were pretty good.
Dark Throne's probably my favorite.
The whole Burning of Churches thing is kind of cool, but...
honestly, for me, it's like the more ignorant a band is, I think kind of the better they are for black metal. The Dark Throne record Transylvanian Hunger is the one for me that I think maybe finally get like, oh, this is it. This is what I'm supposed to be getting out of this music. Like, this is great. And I mean, Dark Throne's got some pretty fucking ignorant shit. they have a record called like Panzer Faust, I think, or something. And it just has this just like lacquer of Nazi vibe over the whole thing. And then you've got Burzum, you know, with Varg Vierknes or whatever, that Lord Grishnak guy, who it's like a one man black metal thing, and he murders Euronymous. He has like a YouTube channel, and it's the most ridiculous, saddest thing ever. I want to say there was like an episode where he talks about like, you know, being like a white nationalist or whatever, and he's just hates Muslims and anyone not white, basically. And he has like videos like teaching people how to play Burzum songs on acoustic guitars, and it's just so pathetic. he's the dumbest guy.
His 111 fans though think he's the greatest.
Yeah, I honestly, if I look over my record shelf, I definitely have a couple Burzum records over there. But he's a monster.
I never got into that whole like corpse paint black metal so much, although I will fully admit to liking Dimmu Borgir. Mostly because I'll admit, I went to Ozfest a few times, and the one time they played the main stage, I was like, oh, this is going to be awful. And they came out and they did the whole, we are spellbound by the devil. I was like, oh my god, this is the best! Because it's just like, it's broad daylight. there's like half the stadium's empty, and they're singing about the devil, and there's like all these moms there. I'm like, this is amazing.
I love the commitment to the theatrics that like a lot of black metal bands will have. It's great.
Yeah, I mean, they had upside down crosses behind them. I mean, they were playing like early, so they didn't get the elaborate stage thing, and they still broke out the pentagrams and the upside down crosses and the capes and the vampire. And I was like, this is a. All these moms were like, I thought we were coming to see System of a Down. What's going on? I'm like, you're witnessing amazingness. That's what you're doing. And yeah. I don't have to cop to it. I love Enslaved probably more than most bands. So I don't know if they're really considered black metal anymore, but I mean, they come from that world, I guess.
Yep. Oh man. That's so good. I guess my overrated, we're overrated, right? Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
My overrated, I guess I would say, I don't know if I really call them black metal, but people do, would be Death Heaven Sunbather.
Is that that Portland band with the pink?
No, they're from California, right?
They're San Francisco.
They have the pink album cover?
Yeah, the pink album cover. They're not a terrible band, but to a lot of people, it's like their first and only experience into what they consider black metal, and they just love it, and it's huge, and it's fine. I mean, to me, it sounds like Explosions in the Sky playing blast beats with a singer. Like, it's not terrible. It's just not. It's not really what I would consider black metal, and it's not what I consider really groundbreaking. But it's certainly not terrible. But definitely overrated. Absolutely, like by the definition of overrated, this absolutely encapsulates it.
Seconded, and
I've seen what they look like, and yeah, I would have to agree. Overrated.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's fine. The last song on that record, Sunbather, the Pecan Tree or whatever, is a great song.
They're like a how Snapcase was.
Yeah, they're just like kind of.
They're like trying to look. They're trying to look sexy.
And their singer tries to kind of cop this whole like Ian Stewart vibe.
Yeah.
You know, like he wears like the leather gloves and like the button up black shirts and kind of tries to look like.
That was whole Snapcase's downfall. As soon as they got rid of that first singer and they stopped looking like scumbags and wearing wristbands when they were play. Then they became kind of terrible.
Speaking of Snapcase, isn't incarnation not really a word? I'm gonna look that up.
Incarnation.
I want to say one of their songs is not, is like one of
no.
The
he's
words.
Right. Incarnation is a song.
But that's a word, though.
Oh yeah, no, it is. It is a word. Is that the other one where he starts off by just saying singing the word?
Incarnation.
Yep.
Oh, you know what I was thinking of. I think it's actually something Undertow did. Instinction is apparently not a real word, or at least it's not a proper word.
Okay, that's
not my fault.
No, that's actually pretty funny. I never would have even known to look for that. That's pretty good.
We were made fun of that for a while.
This is the first I'm ever hearing about it, so that's pretty good.
Of what?
Instinction.
Yeah, I think I think it used to be a word, and now the word for instinction is just instinct. So yeah. it's just like using a like old with an E English word.
Oh, okay.
It's actually the plural of instinct, it looks like.
Oh, maybe it's still
the
a word.
Plural of instinct?
Sorry, I'm on Merriam-Webster's website looking it up.
Please, yeah.
So no, now you can go back and tell everybody that you guys are all stupid because it's totally real.
Yeah, I'm going to go dig up their graves and yell at them.
But I was going to say, as far as Death Haven goes, I will say A, you're absolutely correct in them being overrated. However, I will take it a step further and say they're actually terrible. But I got nothing. I'm just going to say they're like Barnes & Noble black metal. Like... That's
huge diss.
No, I mean, I actually don't mean it as a diss. I just mean, like, that's like...
That's what makes it even worse.
Well, I don't think they're going to be listening.
Awesome.
But
I think what Brian is saying is that he doesn't think about them, and they don't enter his life, and...
No, I just remember when I saw a picture of them, I'm like, those guys all look like they work at the bookstore.
Yeah, they're harmless.
They all look like Zach Osner.
Oh, I'm sure they're like the nicest guys in the world. I'm not into their music. And
they're not.
They're not the nicest guys in the world?
Well, I don't know any of them personally. And one of my friends is quite good friends with them, but I think the guitar player of Def Heaven got in some trouble by like tweeting like mean homophobic shit on Twitter recently.
Oh, really?
I don't know how recently it was, and I don't know, you know, how much of it was people overreacting to someone who's now, you know, got a little level of fame. But I seem to remember when I did follow him on Twitter, I seem to remember saying pretty like ignorant shit. Oh. I think he had a shtick that he was like, his whole thing was like, yeah, I'm a little nerd guy, but I'm actually like a badass. And I think that's what he kind of tried to portray through Twitter.
That's awesome.
I'm gonna be douchey, and you guys are gonna be like, whoa, I can't categorize this guy. You know, it's like, no, you're just a fucking idiot. So
I weep for the future.
Well, he's not gonna be a guest anytime soon.
No, probably not. Yeah, I was actually okay. I had to look up. It was in Spin. People had a problem with him. He was calling people faggots and stuff.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah, so he's a dick. Whatever.
All right, they suck.
Well, I guess on to things that don't suck and things that are totally underrated. Yes, I'm going pre-King Diamond, pre-Merciful Fate, King Diamond's Black Rose. Nailed it.
I heard it.
It was, they basically recorded in somebody's garage, and King Diamond put it out himself in the...
So they weren't a real band.
They
okay,
were a
so.
Real band.
They were his actual band before Merciful Fate, yes.
Yes.
They just never got an album deal, so they never recorded a proper album.
King Diamond put it out himself. He put it out himself in 2000. I own the record, so yes, it does count. Nailed it.
Actually, it's a low quality recording, but you can make out everything, and it sounds like a live recording in a bar, but it's actually awesome. They sound like Deep Purple.
That sounds great.
They are super good.
Well, I don't know if you're like Brian and listen to every one of our shows, but I will end it with some Black Rose, so be prepared.
Yeah, that's a good pick. I forgot. Yeah. That record, like, came and went in, like, a matter of, like, 3 months.
Yeah, because I listened to it for 3 months straight.
No, I'm saying, like, Metal Blade, like, put it out. They put out, like, 2,000 copies, and then they sold them all and said, all right, you'll never see that again.
Pretty much.
They should repress that. That thing was really good.
I got my
copy. For a garage recording. My underrated would be Wintersorg's Solens Rotter.
Again, what are you just making stuff up?
Not making stuff up. I actually, if I'm not mistaken, that album was recorded by one guy who did everything. It's kind of like, almost like melodic, progressive, black folk metal. Like Jethro Tull crossed with Fintroll crossed with, I don't even know, maybe a little bit of Arcturus and... Super folksy and really melodic and just really technical. It's a phenomenal record. I actually think it's just one guy who did everything.
Into it. And go.
Chris there.
Yeah,
Chris is very off the ball tonight.
I don't really have a pick.
It's all right. You only had 2 weeks to think of it. Ew.
Yeah, don't ever do that again. Don't ever do that again.
Oh, I am going to do it again. And I'm going to sign you back up for that group on Facebook. Doing it right now.
Terrific.
Should I go?
Yeah, you might as well.
All right.
Go ahead.
My pick is something that came out this last year, and I really, really like it. I listen to it all the time. Again, I don't know necessarily if it's underrated, but I haven't heard anyone else talk about it very much. So it's Yellow Eyes, Sick with Bloom record. I think it's on Gilead Media. And it's one of my favorite records of last year, and I'd say it's definitely the best black metal thing I picked up last year.
What was that again?
Yellow Eyes.
What is the... kind of cross section of influence.
It's pretty much straight up kind of sort of traditional sounding black metal. It's the riffs are kind of beautiful at times. Not in that Death Heaven way of being, you know, lots of
sexy,
lots of layers, like shoegazy layers or anything. This is just like more, just straightforward kind of crushing black metal. I don't know. I love it. It's fast. The vocals are great. Totally have that, like, you know, screaming from the depths kind of vibe. And I think the guitar parts are really, really wonderful. A friend recommended it, and I was like, ah, check it out. It's a weird name, but I think it's awesome. They're playing this huge festival in Washington State this summer with Panopticon and Vow and Vastum and all these bands, and I'm super excited to go just to see them. And I think they're like the first band on one of the first days, and that's like the main reason I want to go. So
I will have to check them out.
Yeah, they are on the Spotify, so
I've got it pulled up on the YouTube, so once this is over, I'm going to
on
listen.
The Spotify.
Yeah, then you can listen to Wintersorg.
No.
Oh, you're going to listen to Wintersorg.
I suppose.
Has anyone else listened to them?
Not yet.
All right.
Why?
Because they're great. Dude, Solon's Rotter is an amazing album.
Would you say someone's getting into Rotter? What? What? The, dude,
Solon's Rotter.
It sounds like someone's being sodomized.
Could be.
Yeah.
But it's to like minstrel music with like blast beats over it.
Awesome.
So does Chris have a last minute pick, or are we moving on?
I can't even pick them because you already took like a King Diamond, so schmuck.
Boo hoo. Alright, never
and
mind.
I can't really say they're underrated because I don't think they were really underrated.
So you got nothing. Just admit it.
I got nothing.
All right, then. Moving on. So for best thing ever, this is kind of a weird, tough one because it's been 2 weeks. I feel like there's been quite a few cool things going on for here. But I'm going to go ahead and say that my triumph of trying to, I don't even know how to put it, but a friend of mine I've known for a very long time was very much set in his ways, and I'm slowly but surely breaking him out. And today I have introduced him to Starbucks for the very first time. And I quote after his first sip, "Wow," was all he said. And he was blown away by how absolutely amazing it is. And he already told me that if I ever go to Starbucks on my way to work and I don't pick him up a Starbucks, he's going to punch me in the dick. So.
Man, that should be the new ad.
I know, right?
Punch me in the dick.
So Starbucks. That's just kind of exciting because he was very close-minded, especially when it comes to food and drinks and stuff. So I've been cracking away at that, and I'm just super pumped that he's finally into Starbucks.
Wow.
Now on lunch, when I say let's go to Starbucks, he's not going to fight me on it.
I don't know what to say. Okay. My best thing ever for this week was I listened to a couple of different episodes of The Rubin Report and The Joe Rogan Experience with Dr. Michael Shermer. If anyone's not familiar, he's the founder of the Skeptic Society, and he's the publisher of Skeptics Magazine. The interview with David Rubin was pretty good, but the one with Joe Rogan, they get into everything from aliens to Bigfoot to psychics and 9/11. It is like, that guy is like so unbelievably intelligent. It like makes me feel like I should be working at Wendy's.
Doesn't Joe Rogan like immediately believe all that stuff?
Some stuff, yes. Not so much other things. He still has like questions about like the JFK assassination, but he said that when he did that show on Sci-Fi that Joe Rogan questions everything. He said when he was actually talking about it with Michael Shermer, he said when we were getting ready to start filming, I was super pumped because I was hoping that somebody would have something on any one of these topics. And he goes, by the time we finished, and he goes, I think he said the season was like only 6 or 8 episodes. He said by the time they finished filming everything, he's like, I don't ever want to do that again. That made me hate all this stuff, and I can't deal with people like that ever again. I'm done. And he just told Sci-Fi, he goes, don't even bother renewing it for a second season. I'm just going to go do my podcast. This is stupid.
Wow.
He just said, like, meeting people who are, like, part of, like, the Bigfoot Society, just for example. He said being with them was so emotionally draining because they spend so much time and money and resources looking for this thing that probably doesn't exist. He said it just hurt his brain too much. He's like, I couldn't do it again.
Wow. I will check those out. I have really been enjoying a lot of skeptical stuff, podcasts, whatever, quite a bit, and I will definitely listen to that.
Yeah, I've been a kind of a fan of Michael Shermer's for a while, but then I'll, like, go away for a while, and then, like, he puts out a bunch of stuff, and then I check it out again, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right, I do like this guy, because he's awesome. And he's all science-minded, and I'm science-ignorant, so I try to not to be as science-ignorant as I used to be, even though I still am. Because I don't know math that well.
Right. Well, I mean, as long as you know critical thinking, you know. You know, don't make assertions you can't back up, that kind of thing. You'll be fine.
Yeah, and that's, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, this guy, like, the way he breaks down, like, various myths and fallacies into a series of questions of, like, well, how did this happen? Well, where did this come from? And then you're kind of like, oh, yeah, that theory is really bad.
Yeah, I discovered early on the that logical fallacy, the argument from ignorance, when my mother was trying to convince me that there was a God. And she did the whole, like, where do you think the trees come from? Where do you think clouds come from, or whatever? And I had to think to myself, like, wow, she has no idea. She's just guessing. And it's the idea that, like, if you don't know, you can't just, if you don't have an answer for a solution, you can't just insert whatever you want. You know, you can't just say unicorns did it, you know, because it doesn't work. Like,
right. And actually, there was one part of the particular episode I listened to on the way home today where they were talking about all these people that are absolutely convinced that all of our technology comes from aliens. And he's like, so you're telling me that another life form or another species like ourselves came from another galaxy that would take them however many millions of years or light years to get here, only have technological advancements 5 years ahead of our own? And I was just like, poof. I was like, I've never thought of it in such a simple but yet massive way before. And I was like, well, that just blew up the entire alien conspiracy or whatever for me, like, tenfold.
I must have spaced there. What do you mean 5 years ahead of ours?
He's saying that, like, they've traveled from a multiverse however far away, because we all know that the planets in our solar system are uninhabitable other than Earth. So he's saying that you're telling me they've made it from however far out they're from, and we have gotten all of our technological advancements from them, which means that theirs is roughly 5 years ahead of ours advancement wise in that we have now what they had 20 years ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
That's only if you assume that they've been here helping us.
He puts it in a much more succinct way than I just did. I'm just saying, when I heard that, I was like, whoa. My brain just melted inside my head. Just listen to the episode, and you'll know. You're not smarter than he is.
I'm not saying I'm smarter than he is, but you must be explaining it very poorly.
I glossed over a few details. I'll grant you that.
Do I have to remind you that I did take the online Harvard course, Super Earths and Life?
And passed with a D.
No, I did not pass with a D. I had like an 80-something
percent. Majored in mustard tasting.
There's a plethora of mustard out there.
That's from Baskets, dude. I can't claim that one. That's from Baskets.
Well, then I'm not going to respond to it. All right. Best thing ever. Damien, go.
Today I listened to the new episode of Imaginary Worlds. I don't know if you guys listen to that podcast.
Was that the one you told me about with the Wonder Woman?
Yeah. That is the podcast.
I did.
The one today. Oh, you did listen?
To the Wonder Woman, yes.
Excellent. Yeah. I don't know if you enjoyed it.
No, I thoroughly did. I actually, absolutely. You know, it sometimes I listen to podcasts like that and I go, man, I don't do enough research before we podcast.
Well, that's his one job. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But no, it's a very, very, very well done.
Yeah, well, all of them are great. I'd recommend going back and listening through the whole feed, because there's not a ton of them, like maybe like 20 or 25. But the one today came out was all about character alignments, which I don't know a ton about because I didn't play D&D as a kid, but they talk about like chaotic neutral, chaotic good, you know, whatever that kind of.
I feel like that might just make me angry.
And they were describing, well, they talk about that and they apply it to like things that we're seeing nowadays because they talk about the Batman Superman coming out. And they said that the thing that some people had a real problem with Zack Snyder's Superman is because since you guys have all seen Man of Steel, right?
Yes, yes. We actually did a movie roast on it like a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay. Wow. I'll check it out. You know, Superman is generally has always been through entire history like chaotic or lawful good. Like he's always, you know, followed the rules and always done what's best, you know, for everyone. They use the example like just as eager to save the world as he is to get a kitten out of a tree kind of guy.
Right.
But then in the Zack Snyder Man of Steel, since he kills Zod at the end, he goes from being lawful good to being lawful neutral. And a lot of people had a problem with that. And they said this Batman versus Superman is kind of almost a response to that because and usually Batman is not what you would call lawful good, but that's from a lot of the things in the trailer you can see Ben Affleck's character saying he's actually coming from a lawful good perspective against Superman, who in these movies is neutral good. So, although I would definitely say Batman is chaotic good. Anyway, whatever. I'm having a hard time with keeping this straight.
No, I get what you're saying. Well, we've dabbled in trying to play D&D many times, and we always just put it away when our brain starts to hurt. Because mm-hmm. none of us grew up playing it, so we're trying to figure it out, and the books are just not that helpful.
Yeah.
Plus, they're like 800 pages a piece. You know, but that's neither here nor there. You know what? And I was going to say, another podcast you might be interested in checking out then. There's one called Pop Culture Case Study, I believe is what it's called. And they basically, they'll watch a movie or something, and then they'll break down the like, psychology of it. It's kind of neat.
Wow. Okay. I'll check that out.
But, yeah.
Who does Imaginary Worlds? Because I just downloaded the episode you were just talking about, because I'm going to listen to it tomorrow.
You know what? I think his name is... No, I know that's his name. I will find it.
Is he like somebody, or is he just some random guy in his house, like some other podcasts?
I mean, he's I mean, I guess he's. What is his name? I can't remember it. No, stop. No, I can't remember. I'm sorry. I discovered him through the 99% Invisible podcast. They did one. They replayed one of his that he had done on superhero costume design.
Okay.
But because 99% Invisible is all about design, so this was they kind of replayed it, and I found it. And his name's right on the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember. But it's quite good.
Okay.
You know, the other thing is the other best thing though, real quick, is that I got this big box of review and roast stuff today in the mail.
Today?
Well, not today. I'm sorry, I got it yesterday.
Holy cow! Still, I mean, that was like last week I sent it.
It ended up going to, like, because we weren't home, I guess, one day. It went to, like, the UPS drop-off point, and they had to wait to bring it back.
Oh, cool.
I didn't know what it was.
Glad you got it.
Because it came, the UPS drop-off point here is the local, like, flower shop.
That's odd.
So I was like, who's trying to send me flowers from Chicago?
You know, we just love having you on the show so much that, you know.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it.
Yeah, I wasn't sure, like, sizes and whatnot. I just threw in a bunch of stuff, so, you know, enjoy.
Well, I've been drinking out of this review and roast coffee mug all podcast.
Nice.
So thank you.
Of course. I'm glad you enjoyed it. All right, Chris, are you sleeping yet, or do you have a...
No, busting? The Division, dude.
Really?
Yeah.
What's that?
The new game that came out this week.
Oh, well, you said Division, and I'm thinking The Discipline? Wait, no. What?
Tom Clancy's Division.
Gotcha. Okay.
The one I told you to download
the demo of.
Beta, and you didn't, you nerd.
So they had the beta like 3 weeks ago, and the game's out already?
With AIDS, but you didn't want to.
Ew.
With what?
Smallpox.
I'm still confused.
It's...
I saw the commercial. It's like
there's an epidemic that broke out in New York City, and... trying to like smallpox was passed through money by some person,
so
now like the whole city got infected.
Have you been playing that the entire time we're recording?
No.
Liar.
No, it's not even... Dude, how am I going to play it if I got Skype on Xbox?
I don't know. You've just been weirdly quiet all night.
I'm touching myself.
Now, that I believe. That I believe.
We're talking about Bigfoot and big ideas. He's talking about that.
It's called masturbation.
No, it's really good. I like the game. It's really cool.
That's sweet. Well, then maybe you should write a review for it.
I don't know. Oh, shoot. I got to check the thing in. Ryan would. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all right, then. I suppose that will wrap us up for the week. And as always, you can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Theory. You can find Chris at SkateXEdge. And you can find Damien at Damien Johnston. And you can find all of us on, comicroast.com with all of our shows, past, present, and future.
Yeah, that would be.
Right. And then don't forget to head to reviewandroast.com to check out the reviews of TV, movies, comic books, regular books, board games, video games, tablet games.
Porn.
No. We're waiting for you to finish touching yourself so you can write those reviews. Other than that, have a good weekend. We will talk to you next week.
Yeah.